Over 100 nonprofit patient and medical groups support Amendment 2 because they know that Amendment 2 simply ensures that Missourians will have the same access to stem cell research and cures as other Americans. They also know the claims made by opponents of Amendment 2 are not true. Look into the facts for yourself by visiting our website. Amendment 2 is about finding cures and saving lives. Nothing more, nothing less.
Well, that's the latest ad coming from the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures in favor of Amendment 2. It perpetuates, as all of those pro-Amendment 2 ads do to one degree or another, certain myths about Amendment 2 that the Missouri voters will be facing here less than 1 week. Well, 1 week from today, in fact. It's election day, and the Missouri voters will be going to the ballot box. One of the things they'll see there is a summary of Amendment 2 and an opportunity to vote for or against. Kathy Roos joins us here for the first half hour of Issues Etc. We're going to discuss some of the myths about Amendment 2 that are being perpetuated by its proponents. And then in the second half hour of the program, we'll have audio open lines for your questions and your comments. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our call-in number, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. During audio open lines coming up in 25 minutes, a Reuters report on, well, they're called evangelical haunted houses, but they're more often called hell houses or judgment houses. They're being done all over the country by evangelical churches and, oddly enough, by a theater group in Brooklyn who's following the script to the letter, even called in the script writer for the Hell House to approve their production of Hell House. We'll hear about that during audio open lines. There's a CNN story on Creflo Dollar and the prosperity gospel, and an AP feature on a new film that depicts Jesus as African-American. Dr. Martin Nolan joins us in the middle of the program at 4:30 to talk about Martin Luther's wife, Katie Luther. And then in the third hour of the program, we're going to review a Reformation Day sermon. Not a lot of drum beating for Martin Luther, not a lot of triumphalism, cheerleading for the Reformation, but it is a Reformation Day sermon by Pastor Will Wheaton on John chapter 8, if the sun sets you free, you will be free indeed. In the last half hour of the program, we'll have open lines after listening to that sermon. My question is for you, is the Reformation over? Do we need another one? And we'll talk about the current state of the Lutheran Reformation in the last half hour of Issues, etc. It is Reformation Day, by the way, the 31st of October. Kathy Roos is a regular guest. She's a spokesperson for Missourians Against Human Cloning. You might have seen her on television. Missourians Against Human Cloning ran an ad featuring Kathy during the World Series. Kathy, welcome back to Issues, etc.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
What kind of reaction are you getting to those television ads that feature you dispelling some of the myths about Amendment 2?
Well, the ad with where I'm featured is actually just on YouTube, but the ad that we did on the World Series includes the actors and our sports stars here, Jeff Supon and Mike Sweeney and Kurt Warner. But we're getting a fantastic response to that ad. It's really catching people's notice. And frankly, I'm not so sure whether it would have been that big a splash if we hadn't first had the Michael J. Fox ad for Claire McCaskill. So in any event, there's a lot of attention on these ads, and we are very pleased that people are learning more about the deceptions in Amendment 2.
The biggest claim made by the proponents of Amendment 2 is that it will ban human cloning in Missouri. Is that true?
It is not true, and that is the biggest deception in Amendment 2. It's a deception in the text itself, and I can talk about that, but it's also the biggest deception that voters will see when they go to the polls next Tuesday. All they're going to read is a short summary of Amendment 2, and it says in black and white, this Amendment 2 will ban human cloning, and that is not true.
Let's talk about the saga of the wording of that summary that appears on the ballot. It was challenged by either your group or another group in court.
It was challenged by a legal group called the Bioethics Defense Fund that knows a lot about the efforts of tricky lawyers to obscure the wording when it comes down to human cloning. They've had experience in this in the past. And they brought a lawsuit saying that the ballot language was misleading. That lawsuit did not prevail, but interestingly, what the judge said was very simply that the ballot language accurately repeats the language of the amendment itself, which we say that language is deceptive, And then on appeal, an appeals court judge said that the ballot language will tend to mislead voters who oppose cloning. And we agree. It is going to mislead so many people, and that's why it's important for us to get our message out. What the underlying language says is this, and it's 2,000 words, very obscure legal jargon and scientific jargon, but it says this. On page one, it appears to ban human cloning, but you got to look at the fine print. And on page four, in the fine print, it gives biotech firms a constitutional right to do human cloning under another name, under its scientific name, which is somatic cell nuclear transfer. But this is the same process used to clone dogs and sheep. So it's a bait-and-switch attempt to get human cloning in the Missouri Constitution.
All right. Another claim being made by those who are in favor of Amendment 2. If you oppose Amendment 2, then you oppose stem cell research. Is that true?
That's not true, and that's important that you bring this up. Proponents of Amendment 2 are making very emotional appeals to voters, saying that we will have no cures and no treatment and no research without Amendment 2. That could not be more false. All stem cell research of every kind, embryonic stem cell research as well as adult stem cell research, is legal today in Missouri. It is happening across the state. It is happening at Washington University in St. Louis. It's happening at University of Missouri in Columbia. It is happening today, and Amendment 2 will do nothing to change that one way or another. What Amendment 2 will change is the Constitution to create a new right to do human cloning research in Missouri. So this will have no effect on research or any treatments that are coming from that research or not coming from that research. It just doesn't have anything really to do with stem cell research. What it has to do with is cloning. But it's no surprise that people are confused because the language is extremely tricky and purposely tricky.
So if Amendment 2 fails, then nothing will change about what kind of research is being done already in Missouri. Nothing will stop.
Not one thing will change. Not one thing will change. Stem cell research will continue to go on, just as it's going on today. It's perfectly legal, and there's no Amendment 2 won't make it legal. It's already legal. But what Amendment 2 will do is create this constitutional right to do human cloning research, and to it creates a constitutional right to engage in human egg trafficking. This is another one of the things that people are beginning to realize now that's in Amendment 2 that's very problematic. Right now, the egg-buying business is not regulated in Missouri. In many states, it's not regulated. Why is this even important? Well, in order to do human cloning research, you need human eggs, lots of them. And there's only one source for human eggs, and that is the bodies of women. So these cloning researchers need to get their hands on eggs. And so in Amendment 2 is a provision that says that fertility clinics and biotech firms may pay valuable consideration for human eggs. That is a constitutional stamp of approval for human egg trafficking. Takes it beyond the reach of the legislature to provide any sort of common sense restrictions or regulations. It is, frankly, an exploitative business. And this is going to be in the Constitution of Missouri if Amendment 2 passes. So it's very problematic.
All right. So if Amendment 2 fails, stem cell research, including embryonic stem cell research, will continue in Missouri. The only difference is that the legislature, if it will be free to regulate all the issues surrounding embryonic stem cell research, however the people of Missouri see fit, if it passes, the legislature can't touch it.
Correct. Sometimes when I'm talking to reporters and other people about Amendment 2, they want to know, well, why is Amendment 2 even exist? Why are we even faced with it? And here's why. For 4 years here in Missouri, there has been an attempt to ban human cloning, like 6 neighboring states have done. That ban has not passed, but there has been this effort. And so in order to prevent legislatures from one day passing a state law against human cloning, we have Amendment 2. It's a way to get around the legislature and to put the right to do human cloning in the Constitution, and then the legislature can't touch it. The legislature is the people's representative. So If the people of Missouri ever want to restrict human cloning, they will not be able to do it through their legislature. They would have to actually amend the Constitution again to remove this new right, and that's a very difficult proposition. So for all intents and purposes, once you get it in the Constitution, it's there permanently. And that's why it's so important for folks to vote against Amendment 2 if you don't want to see human cloning research done in Missouri.
We're talking with Kathy Ruth, spokesperson for Missourians Against Human Cloning. I'd like to hear from our listeners. What kind of arguments have you heard from your friends, your family, your co-workers in favor of Amendment 2? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. You're listening to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Let's talk about the tax issue then. What is being said is, look, if Amendment 2 passes, it's not going to affect Missourians' taxes or how their taxes go to pay for any kind of research.
Again, not true. That's another big myth that proponents of Amendment 2 like to offer. The truth is also in the fine print of Amendment 2. All of these things we're talking about, they're all in the fine print, but nobody wants you to read the fine print. But if you look at the fine print of Amendment 2, the very last provision on page 5, you will see a provision that's extremely troubling. It says that all government actions, and this would include funding decisions, must be construed in favor of the cloning researchers. So that means that is a constitutional guarantee of public funding for cloning research. But it even gets worse than that. This provision goes on to say that no government action may discourage or create disincentives for cloning researchers. What that means is that Missourians will be prevented from passing even the most basic common sense measures of accountability. This places cloning researchers beyond the reach of the law altogether.
They'll be policing themselves.
Well, in theory, right. Right. But we have, what other segment of industry has that kind of privileged status where they can operate with tax money and without any sort of measures of accountability? That is just bad government, if nothing else. So for people who aren't sure, they think that maybe they favor human cloning for some reason, reason enough to vote against Amendment 2 is the fact that cloning researchers will be beyond the law and will be doing their research with tax money.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with Charlie, who calls from his car. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Todd. I have a question about embryonic stem cell research. I'm opposed to embryonic stem cell research because, as I understand it, it is creating human life in order to destroy it. In other words, the end does not justify the means. Now, your guest just said that embryonic stem cell research currently is going on in Missouri. What protection would this amendment give to embryonic stem cell research, if any?
Thank you very much, Charlie. Good question.
Yeah, very good question. This would create a new constitutional right to do embryonic stem cell research, but it goes beyond that, and it creates the right of researchers to clone human embryos for the purpose of destroying them for embryonic stem cell research. So it elevates embryonic stem cell research to a constitutional right and creates a new right to clone human embryos for that research. So if you're against embryonic stem cell research, you should vote no on Amendment 2. If you're not sure, but you're against human cloning, you should vote no on Amendment 2. If you want stem cell research to continue, you should vote no on Amendment 2 because it's already legal today. There's no good reason to vote in favor of Amendment 2.
So we had a caller, I think it was yesterday, to the program who had a very, I thought, a tremendous insight on Amendment 2. He said, you know, it's often posited that in order for the Missouri Coalition for Life-Saving Cures to be as successful as it has been in convincing Missourians to vote for human cloning for destructive biomedical research, there has to be some vast conspiracy. He says, no, it doesn't take a conspiracy. It just takes enough Missouri voters to vote for a proposal they haven't read.
Well, that is a very good point. I was very pleased to see on Sunday the Post-Dispatch printed the entire language of Amendment 2. Of course, it was all fine print because for 2,000 words, it takes, you know, takes a lot of space to get all that in the paper. But it's in there. And I frankly thought their analysis wasn't half bad. They did give fair coverage to what our objections are of Amendment 2, and when they came down to their own conclusions, you know, they sided with us in some respects. So I hope that a lot of people saw Sunday's paper, but the fine print is not going to be read by most people, and when they go to the polls, they're not going to see it there. They're going to see this summary, which is misleading. But when I talk about this amendment, a lot of times if I'm debating, it's kind of a he said, she said, and people aren't sure who to believe. And what we always try to do is say, our claims are backed up in the actual language of the amendment. We want you to read the language of the amendment. You can find it online. You can find it on our website, which is nocloning.org. You can find an analysis at our, we have a second website called twotricky.org, the number twotricky.org. And you can watch all of our television commercials and listen to the radio commercials, which explain all these deceptions. But it's very difficult to wade through. But I have to say, we're very happy with the trend in the polls. One internal poll shows the margin between the yes and the no votes has shrunk to 6%. When we started out, you know, the other side has many millions of dollars that we can't compete with, and we were 20 or 30 points behind because at first people thought this really would ban human cloning. But voters are beginning to understand they're being deceived, they're getting angry, they're telling their neighbors, and they're planning to vote no on two. So we're getting very close, and we may pull this out, and I think we will. It'll be the Missouri miracle. But voters need to look at the fine print, and they will see that all these various deceptions in Amendment 2.
Barring a Missouri miracle, as you just referred to, the possible defeat of Amendment 2, if it were to pass, what could be done then by Missouri voters? Let's say that a fair number of them who are going to vote for it do it out of ignorance.
Right.
And they, when it's finally done, they say, wait a minute, we were lied to.
Yep.
Do the voters in Missouri at that point have any recourse?
Well, at that point, the only recourse would be to pass another constitutional amendment, basically removing these provisions. And of course, in Missouri, it's a simple majority to pass constitutional amendments, so that's 51%. You would have to get the required signatures to get the ballot measure, the amendment on the ballot. That's a big effort. But if enough people voted against their beliefs because they were tricked, they were deceived, then there may well be some steam behind that effort. But that would really be the only recourse at that point. No law, no regulation, no ordinance. You couldn't starve the cloners to death in terms of tax money because they'd have a constitutional right to tax money, so they'd be doing this research with tax dollars. So there'd be no really other approach other than another constitutional amendment. Let's hope it doesn't get to that point.
Kathy, someone sees all the ads that have been running in favor of Amendment 2. And they see all of the names, the faces that are put up there, some of them well-known, some not well-known. Then the latest ad that we played at the beginning talks about over 100 medical and research groups that are expressed their favor for Amendment 2 and want to see it pass. And they say, how could that many researchers, institutions, and people be wrong about this?
Then that's a good question. I have two things to say in that regard. First is Michael J. Fox. Michael J. Fox has an ad that makes reference to Amendment 2, and he admitted over the weekend he hadn't read Amendment 2. He couldn't defend it page by page, and he himself said that he opposes human cloning and he opposes egg harvesting. If that's true, he should vote no on Amendment 2. But the other point is, you know, there is not a broad coalition of financial support Amendment 2. Behind Amendment 2, we know that $29 million of the $30 million comes from one source, and that's Jim and Virginia Stowers of the Stowers Institute. And they have recently created a new for-profit group called Biomed Discoveries, and that is a for-profit institute designed to market the discoveries that come out of research allowed under Amendment 2. So it's hard to get around the argument that this is an attempt to buy a constitutional amendment. I have no argument with many of these great research organizations in themselves Our argument is with the language of Amendment 2, what the language will actually do to the Missouri Constitution. And given what our polls show about where Missourians are on human cloning, it's going to change. If it passes, it will change the Missouri Constitution against the wishes of 86% of Missouri citizens, and that's just not right.
Let's go back to the phones. Anita is listening in Kirkwood. Hi, Anita. Welcome to Issues Etc.
Yes, there's no deception in this amendment. Missouri legislators have tried to stop embryonic stem cell research in the past few years. If they are successful in doing that, if the amendment doesn't pass, then scientific research in Missouri will be limited, scientists will leave, business will leave. So my question is, if you're objecting on religious grounds, which you are, then say so. Don't use this misinformation. It's not about cloning. The usual definition of cloning is creating a duplicate human being, and that is specifically prohibited in the legislation.
Well, Anita, I guess that depends on how you define a human being. Thanks for the call. Respond to it if you could.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy for that caller's statement and question. And what she raises is frankly not really accurate about what's happening here in Missouri for the last 4 years. There has never been an attempt to restrict embryonic stem cell research or any research. What has been attempted here in Missouri for 4 years is a very simple bill that would ban the human cloning, just like 6 neighboring states have done, 27 countries, and last year the United Nations even passed an overwhelming resolution banning all forms of human cloning, specifically the form of cloning that Amendment 2 would allow. So there's never been an attempt to restrict any sort of stem cell research, which is why Amendment 2 is not necessary. The only people who really need Amendment 2 are the people that want to do cloning research, because that is what the effort has been addressed to, and that's only what has been addressed.
Hey, Kathy, can you give us 5 minutes on the other side of this break?
Sure.
All right, one thing I want you to respond to before we get to that break, and that is Anita raised kind of the boogeyman of religious reasons for opposing this. Is this only an opposition that is born of religious concerns? Mine is, of course, but is it only an opposition born of religious concerns?
Well, it's absolutely not. I mean, you can ask the 86% of Missourians why they oppose human cloning, and I would guess that you'd get a number of different reasons. Some may be people of faith, but others may be just a moral objection to the commodification of human life. There are a lot of reasons to oppose human cloning. And the fact of the matter is, pro-choice and pro-life women have come to Missouri to fight Amendment 2 because they know that it will mean the exploitation of women. It's a group called Hands Off Our Ovaries, and they've been in Missouri campaigning against Amendment 2 because it will mean that cloning researchers will have a constitutional right to exploit women for their eggs. Human eggs are the raw material needed for cloning experimentation. You can't clone human embryos without human eggs. So that's why women's groups are upset about Amendment 2 other groups that have come out against it. There's a whole host of reasons to oppose Amendment 2.
All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back from this break, Kathy Roos will be with us for about another 5 minutes here on Issues Etc. She's a spokesperson for Missourians Against Human Cloning. We're responding to the many myths regarding Amendment 2, and we'll take your phone calls 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can inform yourself, by the way, on Amendment 2. If you have not read it, be a responsible voter. Before you actually walk into the ballot box and cast your ballot, at least read it carefully. You can do so by going to nocloning.org. The entire text of the proposal is there by those who oppose it, saying read it carefully and make up your mind. The website address for Missourians Against Human Cloning, nocloning.org. I do suggest you also watch some of their ads while you're there. We'll be right back with a little bit more on Amendment 2 with Kathy Roos.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How do we teach our children about the nature of the true God? One God, three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, our Creator, our Redeemer, our Sanctifier. From the very earliest years of the Christian Church, Christian parents have taught their children about God using the Apostles' Creed. This ancient and simple creed is a confession of faith in the one true God. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October is a children's picture book called The Apostles' Creed. For more information about this children's book, go to our website, issuesetc.org. The Apostles' Creed is $9.99 plus shipping and handling. Or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, The Apostles' Creed.
Supporting organizations that assist women in need seems like a good idea. Unless you're a member of a radical abortion advocacy group and the organizations assisting women are pregnancy resource centers that offer life-giving alternatives to abortion.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The radical abortion advocacy group NARAL Pro-Choice America opposes congressional efforts to provide aid to pregnancy resource centers that give free medical care and assistance to women facing an unplanned pregnancy. Despite the rhetoric of choice, NARAL and other abortion advocacy groups seem to undermine any other choices except abortion.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. For more about our work to mobilize and advance pro-life women in politics, visit our website at sba-list.org.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Halloween, All Hallows Eve. The day before All Saints Day. Popular culture celebrates ghosts and goblins, tricks and treats. That's fine, but none of those popular things have made much of a difference in the history of the world. What has made a difference today is something remembered by some academics and some clergy. Professor Martin Luther posting 95 theses in Wittenberg, Germany. This date, 1517. For the next 30 years, Luther was a prolific writer. But of all he wrote, the following is, to me at least, the dearest passage of all. Luther wrote, "I believe that Jesus Christ, true God, begotten of the Father from eternity, and also true man born of the Virgin Mary, is my Lord, who has redeemed me, a lost and condemned creature, purchased and won me from all sins, from death, and from the power of the devil, not with gold or silver, but with his holy, precious blood, and with his innocent suffering and death, that I may be his own, and live under him in his kingdom, and serve him in everlasting righteousness, innocence, and blessedness, even as he is risen from the dead, lives and reigns to all eternity." And Luther concludes, "This is most certainly true." That makes a difference, not only in the history of the world, but it makes a difference in your life as well.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. In just a few minutes, we're going to start audio open lines here at Rotary's Report on the so-called evangelical haunted houses. They're not so much haunted houses as they are usually called judgment houses or hell houses. We'll hear a story there coming up in just a few minutes on audio open lines. Kathy Roos is our guest for one last question. We're talking about myths regarding Amendment 2. She's a spokesperson for Missourians Against Human Cloning. So let's get to the ballot box 1 week from today, Kathy. When the person walks in to their voting place and enters the ballot box and looks at the various choices ahead of them, when it comes to Amendment 2, what do they need to know? What should they keep in mind before casting a vote on Amendment 2?
What they should bring with them is the knowledge that a vote no is the vote to make if you're against human cloning. The ballot language itself is very deceptive. They just need to remember that a yes vote is a vote for human cloning and a no vote is a vote against human cloning.
Sandra calls from Peevely. Sandra, thank you for waiting. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Yes, I know. I tried talking to several people, and it's a very heated issue, mostly because people are using their emotions, not really being able. They're usually too tied up working two jobs, and they haven't been able, like I am, I have been able, KFUL has been wonderful having programs on such as this. Dr. Dobson, Focus on the Family, has been wonderful, and the Catholic Church has had several of their papers or Sunday papers they're trying to explain to the Catholics. But it's people who have children or family, spouses, who are affected by, you know, death-threatening illnesses, who are more emotional about this, and they think anything that would help would be beneficial, and they would be for it.
Sandra, thank you very much. Well, your response, Kathy.
Yeah, well, we all care about people who are suffering from disease, and there's no division between the two camps on that point. What people need to understand is that all stem cell research is legal today in Missouri, and if people want stem cell research to continue, it's going to continue because it's legal today. Amendment 2 has nothing to do with that. It won't make stem cell research legal. So if people want research, they've got it. If they want human cloning, then now we're talking about Amendment 2. If you want human cloning in the Constitution, that's what Amendment 2 will do. But it will have no effect absolutely whatever on research in Missouri. So that's a distinction that people need to understand. And what I find is when we speak with people, they don't realize stem cell research is already legal. They have bought the emotional appeals from the other side that says there'll be no research, no treatment without Amendment 2. Those are frankly just lies. The research is here. It's happening. So people should take a deep breath and not worry that they're going to be deprived of research because it's happening today. What the issue is cloning. If you want human cloning in the Missouri Constitution, then that's what Amendment 2 will do. But if you are against human cloning, like 86% of Missourians say they are, then you should vote no on Amendment 2.
NoCloning.org is the website address for Missourians Against Human Cloning. Kathy Roos is their spokesperson. Kathy, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
That website address again, and I do urge you to visit it sometime before you go to the ballot next week, nocloning.org, nocloning.org. It's audio open lines for the remainder of this hour. First, we're going to be hearing a little bit about what is usually called the evangelicals or the Christian haunted house. It's not a haunted house, not haunted in the sense of you usually think of the vampire, the wolfman, Frankenstein, and a guy with a sheet over his head with two holes cut out for the eyes. It's in fact a variation on the haunted house, Christian style, or at least the authors and the originators of these hell houses or judgment houses, and those churches that use them think they are Christian style. Let's first hear a story from Reuters, and after we play this piece, I want to know what you think about the Christian hell houses or judgment houses. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727, or email us here in the studio. We're coming to you live this Tuesday, the 31st of October, not only Halloween, but also Reformation Day. issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's the story on hell houses, judgment houses, from Reuters.
It's a Halloween haunted house with a goal to scare its visitors. But instead of ghosts and goblins, the hell house, staged by evangelical Christians, recreates what they believe to be modern-day evils.
Come right on in.
An actor portraying the devil unveils an abortion scene.
Thou brave and the heart beats.
Where are you going?
It might hurt.
An actress depicts the fetus.
Demons of darkness!
Satan attends the marriage of a gay couple. Teenagers engage in premarital sex. For the past 10 years, the Hell House, which comes as part of a prepackaged outreach kit complete with an instruction manual, has set up in thousands of locations around the U.S. This is the production's first time in New York City. Both evangelicals and curious New Yorkers made up the mixed crowd.
I actually thought it was pretty funny. I thought they were a little overdramatic, and I think maybe that was what they were trying to do.
Like, at the same time when you're laughing, you're also thinking in the back of your head, this is interesting because this actually happens in your neighborhood. It actually happens to people, and it kind of was an awakening.
After going through hell and back, visitors end their trip by listening to evangelical songs. Katie Jewell, Reuters.
Well, that's something you won't get at a regular haunted house, is some guy strumming his guitar at the end. singing songs about Jesus. Well, what do you think about the hell houses or the judgment houses? And they're all over the place. When I drive into the little town I live in, for the last probably 2-3 weeks, there's been a sign up on the outskirts of town, judgment house, or maybe it says hell house, I'm not sure. And it gives the a phone number or an address of a church that's running one of these things. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you think the hell houses are effective evangelism tools? Now, I think it's an important question. Otherwise, it's just ironic. If they're not effective evangelism tools, I guess it would that presumes that they're actually presenting the gospel at some point in all of this gore and horror, which I'm sure they hope to do, maybe through the singing at the end, or maybe there's a message at the end. I haven't attended one of these. If you have, I want to hear from you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's audio open lines. Email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, these things don't happen by accident. They're actually produced from one central location. I think it's out of Colorado, if I'm not mistaken. There's a pastor there who has written the script. He puts the kits together, and you can order it from him, and you can have your own judgment house or your own hell house all around the holiday season. We're going to hear about that in just a minute here. There's another story from Studio 360 on, actually, it wasn't made very clear in that Reuters story, but the hell house that's being done in New York is being done by a theater company, not a church, a secular theater company that thought it would be interesting to do one of these, not as a spoof, not as a farce, not as a send-up, but in fact, simply straight from the script, the way it comes from the author in Colorado. And we're going to hear this in just a moment. Studio 360 has the story. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Before we hear that story, a further story on the hell houses, let's talk with John, who calls from Arnold. Hi, John.
Hey, Todd, how are you?
Doing well.
Good. I went to a judgment house last week, and it was pretty eye-opening. Outside of the only critique I could really give it that kind of got to me was maybe it was a little more Arminian in thought theology I would have liked, but for example, when one gal runs in, she says, "Jesus, you saved me." The guy who was playing Jesus said, "Well, it was your faith that saved you." And I'm like, "Well, Jesus, no, she was right the first time." But
Jesus is arguing with the woman about it. "You saved me." "No, I didn't. I didn't save you. I did nothing."
But Todd, I got to tell you, I would bring, whether Baptist, Lutheran, what have you, any youth group to that. It leaves you with such a vivid portrayal of what it could be like that I think it would really serve in someone's memory for quite some time.
Did you actually get any clear gospel, that is Jesus Christ as the only Savior of all sinners, regardless of your sin, by his perfect life, death, and resurrection for sinners? Did you get that clear in the hell house that you attended?
I wish I could say yes, but I go back to the one quote where it says, "Well, I like how they did it wrong compared to how I didn't do it at all." And so while it wasn't picture-perfect theology, it was enough where they walked away realizing they had no hope in of themselves.
But they didn't get the gospel at the end.
Not how you define it, no. And I agree with how you would define it. And so I give it a, what, maybe 4 out of 5 stars.
All right, John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I mean, on the question of whether it's an effective evangelism tool, in order for it to do evangelism, I don't think I'm being really picky here. In order for something to be evangelism, it has to have the evangel. So it sounds like from John's assessment there, it is an effective proclamation of the law, but either short or altogether deficient when it comes to the gospel. But let's remember, the proclamation of the law is an evangelism. It's the first part of evangelism. I love it. "Jesus, you saved me." "What? Who, me? I did nothing." "You did it all yourself." Well, I paraphrase. Hey, but if they can leave the gospel out, I can paraphrase. So what have we accomplished? We make kids feel guilty. We scare them straight. Is that all these hell houses or these judgment houses are good for? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Remember, if it's not an effective evangelism tool, it's nothing but irony. It's nothing but people who say, "Don't send your kid to a horror house or a haunted house. come and let us do it the Christian way, and we won't even preach the gospel to them. We promise. Chris in Carson City writes this, Carson City, Nevada. What does Chris say? He says, I actually thought it was a little funny and that they were overdramatic. He quotes from a girl in the Reuters piece. He writes, and people are shocked that the White House makes fun of evangelicals. It's times like these I wish I was Catholic, writes Chris. All right, let's hear the story from Studio 360. They did a little longer piece on the actual theater company that's doing the Hell House kit in Brooklyn.
Haunted houses at Halloween are nothing new. One year when I was a kid, my sister and I set up one in our truly grisly basement and charged neighborhood kids a dime to be scared. But nowadays at Halloween, thousands of people across the country go to their churches. Evangelical Christians buy kits to construct what they call hell houses. They're designed by Pastor Keenan Roberts of New Destiny Christian Center in Colorado. And in 2004, one kit landed in the hands of a group of comedians in Los Angeles who cast Bill Maher as Satan and Andy Richter as Jesus. Well, now another secular group has staged a hell house on the other coast, but this one's a little more authentic. We sent Peter Crimmins to Brooklyn to check it out.
The theater company has an absurd name, Les Frères Corbusier. But they're not French, they're not brothers, they're not named Corbusier. Nevertheless, in an upscale neighborhood of loft apartments in Brooklyn, they've taken over a warehouse theater space to put on a hell house to the best of their ability.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I've been expecting you.
The show is part haunted house, part evangelical sermon, in which a demon guides theatergoers through a maze of black curtains. Inside those curtains are rooms where actors, both professional and volunteer, act out the consequences of sin. It's a barrage of bad decisions. A rape becomes a suicide, a gay marriage results in AIDS, an abortion becomes just a bloody mess with an industrial vacuum cleaner as a surgical instrument. This room that we're in now is a classroom.
Meet my old pal Jeremy. I gave Jeremy his first taste of the occult when he was reading Goosebumps. Then he moved on to Harry Potter.
Jeremy is sullen and antisocial. We learn he plays Dungeons and Dragons and listens to Judas Priest. He's also wearing a trench coat. You can see where this is going. Each vignette is about 3 minutes long, and tragedy is telescoped right from the get-go. The messages come fast and dirty, and nothing is left to subtlety. This show in Brooklyn is just the way hell houses are staged in church halls all across the country, says the show's creator, Pastor Keenan Roberts of the New Destiny Christian Center in Thornton, Colorado.
It's not the ballet. You know, it's not cats. It is Hell House. And if you want Hell House to be a genuine representation, it has got to be a rock and roll kind of thing.
What do all those heavy metal songs tell you to do?
Heavy metal songs have been telling poor Jeremy to pull out a gun, shoot his classmates and his teacher, and then himself. Whether or not you agree with that line of logic, you can't help but be disturbed by this performance.
It would be real easy to start playing it tongue-in-cheek. But if you're going to continue to be true to what it's really like for people all across the United States when they go through a hell house, it has to be pedal to the metal the entire time.
Now, that's the author of the Hell House script. That's the guy who actually puts the kits together and sends them out to these evangelical churches. They brought him in. I want to point this out because don't confuse this production of Hell House out in Brooklyn with the one that was done by Bill Maher and his buddies there, where they basically did a send-up of Hell House. They did a spoof or a takeoff on it. This one is completely straight from the script, done with apparently better production values than most churches are capable of doing it, and done for the general public out there in Brooklyn by a secular theater company. They even went so far as to invite the author of the Hell House script out, have him look at their production of it and pass off on it and say, hey, this is how I intended it to be done. And he seems to like the way they're doing it, pedal to the metal, or as he would put it, some words that shouldn't be uttered by someone over 30, a real rock and roll thing. Leave that behind in your childhood. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. Here's more from Studio 360 on these judgment houses or hell houses.
Now it's time for your class trip to hell!
Oh, God! Somebody help me! Help me, please! Help me!
This experimental secular theater company with a funny name is not interested in preaching the gospel. But they were so interested in creating an authentic hell house that they flew Pastor Keenan out from Colorado to critique their New York show.
We're doing our best to create a facsimile of a hell house, but with a completely different sort of ultimate intent.
Alex Timbers is the artistic director of Le Frère Corbusier.
You know, there's also an undeniable frame of irony around the experience that we are in a way trying to evade, but, you know, is undeniable.
There is an inherent irony in an evangelistic haunted house fresh out of the Midwest being staged in Brooklyn. Both Alex Timbers and Pastor Keenan know that, but they've come to an agreement. The theater company promises not to parody Hell House, and the pastor won't complain that this is not in the service of evangelical revival. It's a truce, but it's a prickly one, because ideologically, there's no agreement at all. For example, the original script by Pastor Keenan isn't exactly Shakespeare.
To give it New York off-Broadway production values is not to honor the quality and the spirit of the production. So we wanted to try to match it at the level of the materials they would use, the production values they would use, not to try to make it purposefully bad acting, but to really treat it like a sociological artifact.
We're not satisfied in it being some type of social or cultural artifact.
Once again, Pastor Keenan Roberts.
What it's really about, ultimately and primarily, it is about communicating what we believe to be the truth of the Word of God, the Bible, that sin destroys and Jesus saves.
Some people leave weeping hysterically at how funny it is, and other people... We've had four out of the last five nights, people have fainted in the abortion room. I mean, that's truly visceral theater. And then you have another group of people who exit the production and are furious. They feel like they've been hijacked by the Christian right. The one reaction we haven't had is anyone that's actually expressed to us that they've refound Jesus through it, you know, which is what we've been promised will happen.
Pastor Keenan promises that his Hell House concept, when produced by church groups, has a 30% conversion rate. That means 30% of attendees will find or renew their faith in Jesus Christ. But if we're to believe Alex Timbers' accounts, obviously something's been lost in translation. This does not alter the evangelical drive, says Randall Balmer. He's a professor of religious studies at Columbia University. He's an evangelical Christian himself, and he's the author of the new book, My Kingdom Come.
One of the things that evangelicals believe is that you should preach the gospel, you should proclaim the good news whenever possible, and that the good news will, at least on occasion, fall on receptive ears.
That's true, by the way. Breaking in for just a moment. This is a piece from Studio 360, and it's on one theater group in Brooklyn's attempt to put on a Hell House absolutely straight, without parody, and just to see what happens. And the audience's reaction, of course, is mixed. I'd like your reaction to it as well. Have you been to one of these Hell Houses? Do you think it was an effective evangelism tool, or was it mere irony? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's true that evangelicals, and all Christians for that matter, want to preach the gospel at every opportunity, and that's the real question. John, who called in earlier, said, well, you know, it was very effective in scaring people, showing people the effects of sin, in effect preaching the law, but it didn't rate when it came to the proclamation of the gospel. And there's nothing complicated about the gospel. It's simply, well, he said the whole thing is communicating the truth of the Word of God. This is the author of the Hell House script. That sin destroys and Jesus saves. It's the Jesus saves part that's got to be there for it to be evangelism. And really just to say Jesus saves is, I guess you could say it's, what would that be? That would be the Cliff Notes version of the gospel. You need to say how Jesus saves. He saved us by a life that had no sin, that was lived in your place, and a death that was gruesome and bloody for a reason, not just for shock value. Jesus on the cross he wasn't there for shock value. He was there paying the price for your sins, atoning for your sins, laying down his life for yours. And it's a life that he laid down willingly and that he took up in his resurrection for you. Now, see, that's not complicated. That took me, what, 30 seconds? 30 seconds out of, what, a 20-minute Hell House presentation? Odd, the Brooklyn Theater Company says so far of the many who have gone into the Hell House, done completely from the script, no one's been converted. Lois calls from St. Louis. Hi, Lois.
Hi, Todd. I just wanted to say that, you know, when we're dealing with the devil, we're not dealing with somebody who looks evil. We're not dealing with somebody who goes, ha, 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 come on in here. I'll show you something. We don't deal with him, with that kind of a creature. We are dealing with somebody who comes to us as an angel of light. And he, and his main scheme with us is to get us to doubt the word of God and to say he did not say so. And that's what Satan is really up to, is getting the children of God to abandon their faith and to believe that the word of God is not the word of God. And I think all this scary stuff is just more Halloween stuff.
Lois, thank you very much. Well, laying aside the issue of the scary stuff, I think Lois is absolutely right. The devil doesn't care whether you're scared by your skin. He doesn't. He doesn't care whether you're fascinated by it, enjoy it, troubled by it, worried by it, terrified by it. As long as you don't know that Jesus has paid the price for it. What the devil wants to keep from you is the gospel. He doesn't care if Christians go into churches or hell houses all day long, every day of the week, and listen to nothing but the law. He doesn't care. As long as they don't hear about the one who kept the law in their place. Really. It is not the preaching of the law that causes the devil to flee. Or that causes him a moment's as long as the law is all by itself. As long as people are left either happy or despairing in their sin. He doesn't care. As long as they're still in their sin. Robert in Vermont writes this. This is cute. Hell House for Todd. Lock Todd in a closet with loudspeakers playing Joel Osteen's latest book. That's pretty close, Robert. I've actually experienced that, unfortunately, when we were producing our critique of Joel Osteen's book, Your Best Life Now. I was locked in a studio, not locked, but closed in a studio with it playing over loudspeakers. And not very many things in this world scare me or cause me any disturbance. That one did. Practically gave me nightmares.
Todd, isn't it ironic that these evangelical churches that soft-pedaled the law, the little engine that could, I think, on Sunday morning, you know, give the full force of God's law with no gospel during their hell houses?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, tis the season. Tis the season. Every other Sunday, Jesus didn't really mean that you shouldn't do that or that you should do this. He just wants you to try your best. What concerns me a little bit about the hell houses is that they don't deal with things like gossip, slander, evil thoughts, which will wind you up in hell as fast as any abortion or any Columbine incident. They deal with the big headline-making sins. So someone could, I imagine many Christians do, or non-Christians do, walk through a hell house seeing all the various big headline, big splash of blood sins that they've presented there and say, let's see, I haven't shot up my classmates. I'm not getting married to anyone of the same sex anytime soon. I haven't had an abortion.